You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
The following episode will contain the names of people and places set in the fictional world of the Hyborian Age. Furthermore, if I am unable to find these names spoken aloud on YouTube or in an audiobook, they are names that I will certainly pronounce incorrectly in almost every single instance. Listener discretion is advised.
Today, Conan turns old. Like, real old. Like, senior-assisted living old. And yet, even trapped within this ancient, frail, withered old frame, Conan still kicks more ass than anyone else in the room. That's coming up next, right here, on Hither Came Conan. Hello and welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jeweled thrones of Hyboria beneath its sneakered feet, one comic book at a time. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and today we finish up the Flamewind trilogy as we look at Conan the Barbarian number 34. This issue sports a cover date of January 1974, though it hit the stands in October of 1973. It sold for just 20 cents, and it is entitled The Temptress in the Tower of Flame. It was written by Roy Thomas with pencils by John Buscema, inks by Ernie Chan. The letters were by John Costanza, and Glynis Ween was the colorist.
Into the boat!
Following the events of the previous issue, Conan had passed through the first two trials in the arena, only to be face-to-face with Death herself. The Cimmerian takes hold of her arm, and forcing her to the ground, asks Death a single question. How may one man rule in Wan Tangri? An ancient Kitai legend says that Death must answer any question given to her by a man with the courage to hold her. And yet, Death is reluctant to give it all up on the first date. So instead, she begins to turn Conan old. He watches in horror as his body withers away before him. His hair goes gray and then white. His skin grows wrinkled and spotted with age. Yet Conan does not let go. With his dying breath, he hangs on, repeating the same question, determined to get the answer or die fighting for it. In the end, knowing that she's beaten, Death returns Conan back to his youthful, supple, muscular, tight and sexy frame, and leaning into him, whispers the answer into his ear. Conan, however, is not happy with the answer. But before he can do anything about it, Death disappears, and the Cimmerian finds himself holding not Death's arm, but the arm of Kassar's corpse. The shepherd who smuggled Conan into Wan Tangri in issue 32 and then paid for it with his life in issue 33. The wizard's soldiers rush Conan, demanding to know the message Death had whispered to him, even offering to make him rich beyond his wildest dreams. Conan, however, plays them all against each other, and soon the seven wizards and the soldiers are fighting amongst themselves. It's then that Bortai arrives to sneak Conan to safety through the underground tunnels. They wait until nightfall and then steal into the Flame Tower, where Conan does battle with both a man-faced lion and a giant of a man called Shamash the Terrible. The Cimmerian, of course, kills them both, finds where the princess is being held, and rescues her. As they make their escape, Conan discovers the machine that creates the flame winds. Whoever controls the flames controls the city. And down below, all war has broken out between the seven wizards, their soldiers, and even the citizens of Wan Tangri. Conan destroys the flame machine, and with their power gone, the seven wizards are set upon and killed by the people of Wan Tangri. The princess rewards Conan with a ship full of gold, which he is more than happy to accept. However, as he and Bortai sail away, the princess reignites the flames and magically transports her treasure back to her and transforms the ship into a leaking rowboat, leaving Conan and his companion adrift on the lake. All right, so this is the third and final chapter of a Conan tale that's based on a story that is not only not set in the Hyborian Age, it's set in a completely different universe, and it doesn't feature Conan in any way. And that story is called Flame Winds by Norval W. Page. Actually, the way they put it in the comic is that the story in this issue is freely adapted from the novel Flame Winds by Norval W. Page. I mean, that would be like if I got a gig writing Conan and I did a series of stories freely adapted from the John Wick movies. It's actually not a bad idea.
Daven's a genius!
Conan, he's on a revenge trip because, well, I don't want to spoil John Wick for anybody who hasn't seen it. Because if you don't know, I don't want to spoil it for you. But trust me, you change that setting from present day to the Hyborian Age, you change John Wick to Conan, you're going to have yourself something special.
Guy can dream, can he?
Now, the title to this story, The Temptress in the Tower of Flame, was taken from the title of the Robert E. Howard tale, The Temptress of the Tower of Torture and Sin.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
It was originally called The Voice of Elil until the title was changed to The Temptress of the Tower of Torture and Sin by the editors of Avon Fantasy Reader for their 14th publication in 1950. I myself have never read The Temptress of the Tower of Torture and Sin, but based on what I found on reh.world, the story, well, here's what it says.
A captivating adventure story by Robert E. Howard, written in the 1930s. It takes readers into the mysterious depths of Africa, where ancient civilizations and supernatural phenomena intertwine. Through the narrative of Bill Kirby, an English adventurer, an Englishman, and an American venture into Somaliland, where they discover a tribe of people who have not yet advanced or progressed with the rest of the world, and have remained as they were about 3,000 years earlier.
So yeah, known old Bob, this sounds like the kind of tale that it is just ripe with racism. So kind of glad I didn't read it. Anyway, I know that I have been saying for the last two episodes that I was going to read Flame Winds by Norval W. Page so that I could compare and contrast the original story with this Conan tale, but you know what? Never did. Never read it. There's just way too much stuff to do in my day. And something had to give. And that was reading that story. So sorry. Maybe in the future, but I doubt it. I doubt it. I say stuff like that all the time. I doubt it. So yeah, no comparing and contrasting. But we still got this great Conan issue to talk about, right? So how about we dive on in? All right, so as we always do, let's start with the cover. It was penciled by Gil Kane, inked by Ernie Chan, and it depicts Conan, sword in hand, pulling the veil off of death as the manticore or the human-faced lion, whatever you want to call it, is lying there on the steps dead before them. I rather like this cover. I mean, at first glance, if I didn't know anything about the story, I'd have done a double take. If I had just run across this, you know, like on the rack at the comic book store or the 7-Eleven or the grocery store or whatever, which I wouldn't because this was published in October of 1973 and I was one at the time. So yeah. But had I been, we'll say 10 years old and I'd run across this for the first time and I saw that cover, I probably would have done a double take because here's this half naked woman on the cover with a skull face. You got Conan, sword in hand. He's clutching at something. It's obvious knowing from the story that he's pulling the veil off of her face. But I think with no knowledge of what was going on inside the either the previous issue or this issue, you may not know exactly what it is he's doing there. It's like maybe he's waving a flag in front of her. Look at this flag. Look at it. It's in front of your face. But then you have this lion thing on the ground and to me, again, just looking at it, if I was thinking about it for the first time, I would assume that that is like some kind of were-lion, you know, like a werewolf, but with a lion instead of a wolf. And so he's like walking around on two legs and just being all badass and stuff. But yeah, that's not what they ended up doing in the issue. That's fine. I hate it when people do that, don't you?
I mean, so they came over and they slapped me in the face, which is fine. That's fine.
No, it's not fine, or you wouldn't have said it. So yeah, it's not fine that they didn't make it a werelion and instead made it a manticore.
Oh, I am so very angry.
I'm going to quit doing this podcast. I'm not going to quit. Anyway, they also used this cover for the cover of the Marvel Epic Collection that I'm using to read all these Conan tales, or at least this volume, because they put them out in a bunch of different volumes. So this is the one that this issue is in is Conan the Barbarian Epic Collection, the original Marvel years, The Curse of the Golden Skull, and it collects Conan the Barbarian issues 27 through 42. So if you think about the fact that I had such a, you know, like what, a 5-month gap there in between episodes in which I talked about issues 32 and then 33, it was like 5 months in between there. Well, plus issue number 27, that episode, that landed back in July 15th, 2024. So I have been looking at this cover to the Epic Collection and hence, yeah, that's right. I said hence the cover to 34 for a year now. Every time I go and start thinking about doing some Conan, some Hither Came Conan, you know, I go to this Epic Collection because that's where I'm at. So I've been seeing this issue or seeing this cover a lot. I've been living with this image for over a year. And honestly, I'm not sure how I feel knowing that I still have 8 issues to go before I'm living with a completely different cover when I start the next Epic Collection. But still, because of that, this cover will forever hold a special place in my heart.
I just love it so much.
All right, so getting into the issue itself, they managed to give us a brief synopsis there on, well, it's page 1 of the story. It's told to us in just 3 panels, plus a text box in the 4th panel, and there's only 4 panels on this page. And it goes a little something like this. The story so far. Conan the Sumerian, now a soldier in the pay of Turin, has come east on a spying mission to the city called Wan Tangri. Here, the 7 wizards and their awe-inspiring flame tower hold undisputed sway. Here, he has fought a tentacled werething in icy waters. Here, he has killed 7 warriors in a torchlit arena, only to have his shapely prize prove to be a far greater menace than the men and beasts he's slain. That's pretty
cool.
That was a pretty good synopsis. The shapely prize mentioned there is, of course, death. And I can't help but think of something truly, truly horrible I came across once in a Harlan Coben book, of all places. But it's the term butterface. Have you ever heard this term before? Butterface.
Talk about a butterface.
Well, it's horrible. It's horrible. But according to the book I read, and the title escapes me, I don't remember which one of his books it was. I went through a kind of a Harlan Coben period for a while. But if I remember from that book, I think the main character was explaining it the way his teenage son had explained it to him, which is that a butter face is a girl who has the kind of sexy body, you know, that men go to war over, while her face is a little unattractive. In other words, her body is smoking hot, but her face...
God gave her one hell of a rack and legs to die for, though.
Butterface!
Like I said, it's horrible. I'm not a fan of it, but I've never actually said it in context, in the way in which it was meant. But I don't know. When I look at death with her smoking hot bod and her skull face, that was the first thing that came to my brain. And makes me kind of feel a little bad.
Cats ate her face.
Anyway, this story picks up where the previous issue left off. Conan, he's just pulled the veil from Death's face, and she calls him a fool for basically not just falling under his spell. And yet, she continues to try and entice him, because once she, I guess, if she embraces him, he will die. And Conan, he's not having any of that.
Oh, you are so on that things have now become very much like Donkey Kong.
He grabs her by the arm and he pushes her to the ground. He's standing over her and he asks her how one man may rule in Wan Tangri. Because I guess there's this old ancient legend that says that in Kitai, death must give answer to any man with courage enough to hold her. Now, I feel like Conan learning about this legend was something that maybe happened in the previous issue or maybe in issue 32, but I haven't been able to find it. Not quickly anyway, not without going back and reading a bunch of stuff again. And I don't have time for that. So if my feeling is correct, and you know which issue and in which scene Conan first learned of the legend, let me know. Otherwise, forget I said anything.
And now we come to the point in the show when your host drifts off in his own mind and, for a moment, becomes lost. Thankfully, we have skipped all that and will take you now back into the episode as your host begins to collect what little wits he had in the first place.
But, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I just felt it was kind of weird because I feel like I ran into that at some point. I just don't remember where, and I don't want to start rereading all 33 previous issues just to find it. And I couldn't find it quickly when I was just kind of scanning through the last couple of issues. But if it's not something they had established already, it's kind of weird that they would just introduce it like this ancient legend. And I don't know. It makes me feel like if they hadn't mentioned it before, that, I don't know, I feel like if Roy knew that this was going to be kind of an integral part of the story in the third part, that maybe he would have put it somewhere in the first two parts, kind of as a call, you know, here's a little foreshadowing, you know, we're just building a little something, a little world building here for this. But again, I couldn't find it. So if you can find it, let me know. feedback@hithercameconan.com. Otherwise, yeah, that's just, they just never mentioned it before then.
You have nothing that I want.
Now, while we're on this page, page two of the story, I wanted to point out panel four there on that page. I had mentioned earlier that I'm reading all of these stories or all these issues from the Marvel Epic Collections. They're all digital. I bought them back when Marvel still owned the Conan license the second time. But I've also acquired scans of the issues, scans of the original issues, you know, before they were touched up, redone, made to look better for these, you know, like the releases in 2000 and whatnot, whenever they were re-releasing them. 2019? Well, I don't remember when that was. Anyway, I don't know if you have the original, if you're looking at a digital reissue, but if you look at page four, or if you look at panel four on page two, look at the back of Death's head. In the Epic Collection version, the version that Marvel cleaned up all the stuff, maybe recolored some areas and whatnot before putting the issues or the collections together, because they scan them all in digitally now and all that junk. But somebody there colored the back of her head white, which makes sense, right? She's got a skull for a face. Wouldn't it stand to reason that her entire head is a skull? I mean, of course, her entire head is a skull. My entire head is a skull. Your entire head is a skull. But here in the Epic Collection, with the back of her head being white, you just have to assume that she has no skin or hair on her head at all. It's just exposed skull and nothing else. But look at those few squiggly lines there on the back of her head. See them? Keep that in the back of your brain. Because in the original version, looking at the scans, the back of her head isn't colored white in that panel. It's more of a pinkish red, or at least that's what I see. I'm a little bit colorblind. But to me, had I read the scanned original first, I would have assumed that it's only Death's face where the flesh has fallen away and the skull is exposed, while the rest of her head, based on that one panel and those squiggly lines on the back of her head, it makes it look like the rest of her head still has some flesh and hair remaining, but maybe not much. And what's there looks like raw hamburger. And it just makes me curious about either what the colorist was thinking back in 1973, you know, was the mistake made bad back then, or was it made when they refurbished it for the collection? Because there is there's a point coming up here in just a page or two where I think it's one of the wizards, or maybe one of the soldiers, refers to Death as the maiden in the skull mask. So maybe it's not actually Death. Maybe it's a woman who's all burnt and she's got a skull mask on, but I don't think so. I think that's just what the wizards believe because they don't want to believe that they actually have Death in their midst. But there's even a point near the end of the story where I think Conan wonders if maybe it wasn't Death and somebody that the princess planted there herself in
a skull mask to help kickstart the whole revolt that happens. But we'll get to that. Anyway, I found that kind of interesting, that little change that they made between the coloring of the original and then the when they collected them 10, 20 years ago.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages. Are you looking for a podcast that dives into the very beginnings of the Man of Steel? Then check out the Superman Super Show. My name is Steven, and along with Ed Moore, we're just a couple of guys separated by 1,000 miles of geography who like to read comics. Now, we don't claim to be experts on Superman or the Golden Age of comics, but we're on a mission to read every single Superman story from his earliest adventures, one comic book at a time. And each episode will take you back to the Golden Age, where Superman's journey began. From his first leaps over tall buildings to battling mad scientists and mobsters, we break down every story, sharing our thoughts, insights, and laughs along the way. New episodes drop every 2 weeks. So whether you're a longtime Superman fan or just curious about his roots, we invite you to join us on this incredible journey through comic book history. Find the Superman Super Show wherever you listen to podcasts and start exploring the Golden Age of Superman with us today. According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. So check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
So anyway, back to the story. Conan's got Death by the arm, and Death, well, she's not the kind of girl that likes to be manhandled. And so she calls out to the big barbarian to look at his hand. And of course, Conan does so. And looking at his hand, or at least the one that's holding Death by the arm, Conan sees that his entire body, starting with the hand, has begun to grow all kinds of old and shriveled. By page 3, Conan's on his knees, his hair's gone white, and I mean, look at his face there in panel 2. He looks like an old crone. I mean, he looks like he's literally minutes or seconds from dropping dead of old age. And yet Conan's still fighting. He never lets go of her arm. And instead, he's there on his knees. He looks like he's about to die. He looks like he's about to kick the bucket. And he's clutching her arm and he screams,
"I was born free in the wilds of Sumeria, and I will die the same way. Do you hear me, woman? Do you hear me?"
She does hear. And like that, Conan is young again. And so, looming over Death, still clutching her arm, he asks her once again,
"How may one man rule in Wan Tengri?"
All right, so I talked about this in the last episode, but we have to remember that in issue number 1, Conan is given a glimpse of his future, and he learns that one day he will be the king of some unknown nation. And so learning that Wan Tengri was taken over by these 7 wizards, and learning that they killed the king, this all happened 6 months ago, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that in the previous episode, but these 7 wizards have been ruling Wan Tengri for 6 months. Anyway, learning all this, Conan wonders if Wan Tengri is where he is destined to rule, which is why he's asking Death right now how one man can rule in Wan Tengri. Now, Death, having realized that Conan's not going to give up, she, like I said, she transforms him back to his youthful self. And after a couple of ads, we get over to page 6. And Death is now leaning into Conan to whisper the answer into his ear. While he does that, the wizards in the stands are watching. And this first panel here on page number 6 might be one of my favorites of the issue, just because I think it's really kind of silly the way that these wizards are talking, because you're looking at Conan and Death down in the arena, but you're looking at it from the perspective of somebody up in the stands. And you're over where, I'm assuming it's the Black Wizard. I've learned that it's, let's see, gold, black, green, red, violet, blue, and white. Those are your 7 wizards. But the Black Wizard calls out,
"Look, you brother wizards, she's whispering in his ear."
One of the other wizards responds with what I think is one of the funniest moments by saying,
"In truth, this is not on the program."
Like, it makes me feel like they actually handed out printed programs before whatever the hell this is supposed to be. This 3 trials for this barbarian that they've captured. Like, they've been planning this for weeks and months, and they've printed up programs and they've handed them out to everybody. And the one guy's looking at his program and is like, "What the hell? This isn't in the program. What's going on? This is supposed to be the part where the 5th grade choir comes out and sings Jingle Bells." You know, I just think it's really funny, because then the Black Wizard responds,
"In the name of ourselves, who is that wanton wench behind the mask of bone?"
So that's the moment where a wizard mentions it's a woman with a mask on. But the fact that he says, "In the name of ourselves." In the name of ourselves, that would be like God saying, "In the name of me, what's going on here?" That's what they're doing. That's how much these wizards believe their own hype, basically.
Don't believe the hype, people.
So in panel 2, Conan has now learned this secret, or the answer to his question, and he's not happy with it. We don't know what it is. They haven't told us. We'll learn it by the end of the issue, but right now we don't know what it is. We only know that Conan's not happy, and there wasn't very much to the answer, apparently, because Conan is, he's...
"What? That's all you have to say? It's not enough, I tell you. You tell me more."
And she won't, and she mentions to him that he already knows more than any man living or dead. And as she's saying that, she's disappearing, and I don't know exactly what... I want to know exactly what that means. Is she referring simply to the answer she gave him, because... It's a weird thing to say once you kind of know the answer. I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess it could hold true if she was just speaking about the answer she gave him. Maybe we'll discuss it a bit when we get there. Or is she talking about the fact that he knows that eventually he's going to rule some nation, and that nobody should know that much about their own future? And so that makes him, you know, he knows something more than any living man or even a dead man may know. And I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting. But she disappears, and as she does so, he's still clutching her arm, and he notices that she basically kind of replaces herself with the corpse of Kassar, who was the shepherd who smuggled Conan into the city and who died in the previous issue because they caught him for smuggling Conan in.
That's so sad.
So Conan is standing there in the arena with Kassar at his feet, and he's clutching Kassar's hand. And then in the final panel, Conan is starting to realize that it's time to get the hell out of here. He needs to flee. I'm a big fan of this final panel in this page 6 here, because I think it's just a, you know, it's these little things. It's just a close-up of Conan's face, but it's just a wonderful piece of art as far as I'm concerned. Page 7, the soldiers, the guardsmen, the bodyguards, whoever, of each of the wizards have come down into the arena, and they want to know what Death told her. Everybody heard, because Conan shouted it. Everybody heard his question, but they didn't hear her answer. Kind of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but no, everybody knows the answer. Nobody knows the question in that. Anyway, all these soldiers come down. They want to know the answer, and they're offering him money, and each of the wizards is starting to outbid each other. They want to know what the answer is, because right now 7 wizards rule Wan Tangri. If Conan has the secret to how one man can rule Wan Tangri, one of these 7 wizards wants that, because that means they can rule the city. Conan, on the other hand, he's sitting here listening to them argue and, you know, throw out bribes and junk. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. They're trying to buy Conan. Each one's outbidding the other. And finally, Conan just says,
"All this shouting makes my poor barbarian ears hurt. Come to me when I have one wizard to deal with, not seven.
And that causes all of the wizards and all the soldiers, they just start kicking each other's ass because they know at that point, you know, again, whichever wizard gets the secret is the one that's going to rule. And the only wizard that's going to get the secret is the one that's left standing. And the only way that one of them is going to be left standing is to start what's basically a civil war amongst the seven wizards and their soldiers. And we get a few panels here on page seven where just this brawl erupts and Conan is, of course, stuck in the middle. We see the green wizard fire a bolt of energy of some sort over to what looks like the black wizard. And Conan is starting to realize by the end of this page, he's starting to realize that maybe he bit off a little more than he could chew. He's trying to be clever. He's trying to start some shit. And now he's starting to pay for it because he's right in the middle of it and he doesn't know how to get out of there. There's just way, way too many blades for him to take care of. But then in the final panel, we see a door open and an arm reach out and a voice that says,
"Over here, master."
Skip a couple ad pages to get to page 10. And we find out that this is Bortai, who has come to guide Conan to freedom and to life. And Conan's pretty surprised to see him. He has, at this point, assumed, because if you remember from the previous issue, Bortai and Conan were trying to sneak into the Flame Tower. They were underneath. They had gone into the Flame Tower. And then Bortai just disappeared. And it wasn't long after that that Conan was captured. And so he assumes that Bortai betrayed him. And so seeing Bortai now come to save him, he's a little surprised. He just assumed that Bortai wouldn't stick his neck out for anybody. And Bortai's like, "No, that hurts, dude. Come on, I'm here for you. I want to help you." And so they escape in the tunnels. And Bortai takes him to the room, or a room, not the room, takes him to a room where he shows him a little gift. Bortai found his boots. And he found them in the home of Tease and Hugh, which was the guy from the issue 31 where he goes into the pool. And so, yeah, that's where he left his boots. So now he's got his boots back. Conan is, he takes it more of a way, I guess, for Bortai to kind of throw him off his game to make him try to trust him. And he tells Bortai,
"Why, you spawn of a demented ape? For an extra crust of bread, you'd betray your own mother."
And Bortai has what I think is the best response.
"As a matter of fact, I did. I didn't say I'd never betray you, master. Merely that I never have."
Which is a great answer. He's saying, "Look, I'm not saying that I'm not gonna give you to the guards at some point or sell you for a bag of gold at some point. You know, if something comes up and I can get some cheddar for that, if I can get my thing, Bortai's gonna do his thing. He's gonna do me." Is that right? No. Bortai is gonna do Bortai, right? I don't know, who cares? But he said, I may do that in the future. I'm just not doing it now." And Conan decides, "All right, that's a good answer, Bortai. I'm going to trust you." He pulls his boots on and then he kicks back and he tells Bortai that they're going to wait until nightfall before they make their move, which shocks Bortai because they're practically free. They just have to get out of the city and they can go. And Bortai, what are you talking about? You tried to free Kassar. He's dead. That's why you went in there. Let's get the hell out of here. And Conan's like, I got my reasons. You'll find out when the sun sets. Page 11, it's nightfall. Bortai wakes up Conan. They sneak into the Flame Tower. They come to a big portcullis, I guess you'd call it, a big wall, a door of iron bars. Conan can see that the bars go up and down into the ceiling. So we have to have a moment here where we see how strong Conan is. We have to see Conan has to, you know, he's got to do a feat of strength at least once every couple issues. It's like John Travolta has got to dance in a movie. Tom Cruise has got to run in a movie. Conan's got to do a feat of strength in one of his stories, every one of his stories. And here it's just moving the bars. And, you know, it takes all his strength to lift them just enough for Bortai to slip a rock underneath him and hold the gap so the two of them can roll under the grating, the bars. Skip a few more ads. That takes us to page 14. They've gotten under the bars. They've gone to a room that has a lion chained to the wall. I don't know if this was part of the original Norval W. Page story. It may have been. Roy talks a bit about this scene in his book, Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1. And the first thing he mentions is that the lion is supposed to have a black mane. And it's right there in the caption. Panel 3 of this page.
At first glance, in the dim half-light,
the creature would seem a lion, though a huge black-maned one.
But it's brown. They colored it brown for some reason. The second thing he points out is that it's supposed to be a lion with a human face. It's supposed to be a manticore, ultimately, though it doesn't seem to have a scorpion's tail. A manticore is like a lion's body with a human's face and a scorpion tail, I believe. I just looked it up not that long ago. But Roy's first gripe, beyond the fact that the mane was colored brown instead of black, was that when John Buscema drew the face of the lion, while he did make it appear rather human-faced, as Roy puts it, he just kind of flattened his snout to make it appear less feline and more human, and that's not really what Roy was envisioning.
It's not what I envisioned.
I rather like it because I think it looks super creepy. I don't know. It might have looked even more creepy with an actual human face, or it might have just looked stupid. It might have looked incredibly silly. Here, it looks like a lion with a bit of a human face, a bit of intelligence in its eyes, and Conan starts to fight it. Of course, you can't throw a lion in front of Conan, and Conan doesn't fight it. It's the end here of page 14 where they actually call it a manticore, but Conan ends up killing it on page 15. He just kind of basically smashes it in the face, just, I guess, cuts its head in half, you know, not, you know, just the blade, bam, right between the eyes, basically, just chops him right down the front of his face, to his nose, between his eyes, to his mouth, kills it. That is when we meet the next, what's the word I want to use here? William Dalstead says, poor manticore, right? There was no reason for that. They didn't need to put that manticore in there just so he could chop it in half, chop its face in half. And look at, all right, so if you're looking at the comic when you're listening to this or as you're watching this, they're on page 15. That first panel where Conan is on his back and the manticore is over him, Conan's got like one foot pressed against the manticore's face, and he's grabbing the face with his other hand. It's a great, great panel. It's panels like that that just make me love the fact that John Buscema is on this comic, because he can do stuff like that.
The best of the best of the best of the best of the best.
So Conan kills the manticore, and then he faces his next challenge, Shamash the Terrible, which, granted, the dude is a giant, or at least he's a bit taller than Conan. He's much bigger than Conan. I would have rather Conan come up against him before the manticore. It just seems like he just fought a legendary monster beast type thing and killed it, and now he's just going to face some big dude.
That is weird. You're right.
It's like the challenges are de-escalating rather than escalating as he goes. But that's what they give him to fight. The dude is rather big. I mean, he might be a head or two taller than Conan, but Conan, of course, is faster than him. And on page 16 here, they start to fight, and it's not much of a fight. The guy swings his freaking spiked mace at Conan. Conan ducks it and then sticks him in the chest with his sword.
It's not fake. It's totally brutal.
The guy, sword sticking out of his chest, realizes that he's done for. Yet he's still strong enough at that point to lift Conan up by his shoulders, hold him above himself, looking up at him, and he says,
"Dying, I can feel it. But the wizard said if I was slain at my post, I'd spend 7 eternities in 7 fiery hells. Don't let me die, man. I beg of you, don't let me die."
That's what he says as he's dying. That's his dying breath. The whole time, Conan is just standing there stone-faced, watching the man die, because that's Conan. I mean, come on. He stuck you in the chest with a sword, dude. You think he's going to go, oh, I'm sorry. Let's see what we can do. Here, let me get a bandage. We'll put a little bandage over the hole in your heart. That'll fix you. But, you know, he's a big, tough dude. But the moment he realizes that he may face this freaking 7 eternities and 7 fiery hells, that's when the fear takes over. But doesn't matter. Conan lets him die.
We're all going to die, Steven!
Bortai makes an appearance again right at the end of this scene. He was kind of hiding back. He's really happy that Conan killed both the manticore and the big bald giant. And they continue on.
About time for me to be hitting the old dusty trail.
Bortai takes Conan to a door. Conan calls him Monkey Face again. One thing I failed to mention in the previous episode is there's a moment where Conan refers to Bortai as Monkey Face, which I'd said I'm not a big fan of that name, but Bortai asks him to not call him that. Tells him, my name's Bortai, and you make me look bad in front of the other thieves. Don't make me look bad in front of the other thieves. Come on. And Conan tells him that he wouldn't call him Monkey Face in front of the other thieves. It's a really nice moment. But he calls him Monkey Face here. Bortai is all, come on, man, it's Bortai. Knock it off. But he points him to this door, and he says that the princess's chambers is on the other side of these doors. Conan, being, you know, just the sweet, polite fella he is, says,
why then stand aside, apeling? We'll see if Keaton Wood can stand against Cimmerian sinew.
And he basically runs into the door with his shoulder to try to break it off its hinges. Hinges? 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 Hinges.
Word is lost all meaning.
Instead, he splinters the door into toothpicks, basically. And he makes a comment about it that obviously it's not as strong a door as he thought it was, that nobody assumed that there would be any visitors to this door, because it's kind of a funny moment, because he goes at that door and he just goes through it like it's made of styrofoam and falls on his face, and it's a pretty funny moment.
That's not funny!
William Dahlstedt pointed out in the comments, once killed a man in Wan Tengri just to watch him die. That's Conan. I remember, I don't know where that line originally comes from. I heard it in an episode of Wings, when Joe told somebody, I killed a man in Reno once just to watch him die. I don't know where it originally comes from.
I once shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
Excuse me?
All right, I didn't, but it sounds a little more interesting than I voted for Dukakis.
Oh, Johnny Cash. William Wallstedt points out, it was Johnny Cash that once said, killed a man. Was it Reno? Killed a man in Reno? Is that the actual line is correct? There's a delay, so I'm going to wait.
10 seconds later.
Yep. William Dahlstedt confirms Reno. So I had the line right. Joe from Wings was quoting Johnny Cash.
Stupid Johnny. We'll do it for Johnny.
Johnny Cash is kind of a badass. He wasn't messing around. Anyway.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Hello. How are you? This is Sean Merrick from the podcast Worst Collection Ever, where myself and my wife, Jennifer Stansfield Merrick, talk about the weird, the funny, and absolutely insane comic books in our comic book collection. Are they good? Probably not, but we're going to have fun anyways. We took a little break, but now we're back with brand new episodes, so please check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, even check us out on YouTube, Angry Hero 79. You can subscribe, you can review, you can rate on there, and we'd love to hear from you. So check you then.
Worlds would live.
Worlds would die.
And DC Comics would never be the same again.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The crossover so epic it reached every corner of the DC multiverse. Join DC Dave.
And Doug Adamson as we discuss The Monitor Tapes.
Crisis in Infinite Earths podcast.
Find us on your favorite podcatcher and join the discussion at themonitortapes.com.
Love her, love Uncle Ben. They are the best. Just ask the whole group of kids, hey, do y'all want to go to the science exhibit? Like it's the most normal thing in the world. I felt this bite on my hand. It was a weird-looking spider, like it was glowing. This is amazing. So before it fades, I've got to figure out something I can do. Okay, world, better hang on to your hat. Here comes the Spider-Man. The Spider Diaries, a John Reed's Comics production. Look for The Spider Diaries on your favorite podcatcher or at johnreedscomics.com. And there's no H in John.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
So Conan's laying there amongst all this wood. He's on his, he's laying on his face. He's picking himself up off the floor. And he sees these two people there who Bortai. He identifies them as the princess's attendants. One of them starts to call out that, basically intruders, I must summon. And Conan walks by him and pushes him by his face, just pushes him over using his face.
tells him, you're not going to summon anyone, old man.
He goes to the princess, and she is chained to the throne with gold chains. And so going over to page 18, he uses his sword to cut the chains because, as he puts it,
they were made to resist nothing stronger than a woman, after all.
Just shake my head sometimes. Conan, come on. Her response to him, though, is,
and I am but a mere woman, as you, barbarian, can plainly see.
Which, I think she's fucking with him. I think she knows. I think she knows he's being an asshole. She knows she's gonna, we learn that she's a pretty strong lady. She's not somebody who just, oh, the big barbarian has saved me. I must give him everything I want because I'm just a woman.
I think we solved sexism, guys.
So Conan rescues the princess. The princess immediately just acts like she is just super infatuated with the big sexy barbarian. In fact, she even mentions that with Conan at her side, Juan Tangri could be hers again and offers him, you know, would you like to earn a ship full of gold? And he likes that. But he just noticed that the two attendants are gone. And so they have to go find them before they, you know, or at least they need to get out of there before the guards come in, because that's where they assume that the attendants went to, is to warn the guards. So Bortai leads them out. Conan makes a comment that Bortai seems to know his way around the Flame Tower. That doesn't in any way come up again in the rest of the issue. I thought at this point that we were going to learn something about Bortai maybe by the end of the issue, that maybe he used to work in the Flame Tower or something. But no, that doesn't, that question isn't answered at all that I recall by the end of the issue. But they go up these winding stairs and they go into the room where the machine is held. And the machine is what creates the flame winds. There, it's this big, tall machine, and there are these troughs going into the machines. And in these troughs are flames coming out of the troughs, basically from the center of the machine out into the sky. The flames are warm, as Conan puts. He says, but the metal is strange. He's not seen that metal before, but he's curious. And that's when he sees the two attendants there doing something to the machine.
Marshall versus the machine.
Move along.
Skip some more ads. We get to page 22. Conan gets very rough with the old man, threatening to kill him, basically, if he doesn't tell him what he's doing, or at least he threatens to punch his teeth out. The old man tells Conan that it's his orders are to seal off the top of the tower flame. You know, if anything is to happen, first thing he's to do is to seal off the top of the tower flame, but he was too slow. Conan wants to know what's the point? And that's when we kind of learn a bit more of the secret of the flame winds. Because Conan is asking the old guy, you know, why are you worried? Because don't the wizards, because they're wizards, why do they need this machine to have more power? And the attendant tells him, well, that's not what they think. And that's what he tells them about the machine, which is basically, he says,
it is the flame winds above all that hold the people in check. There is something in the air here, something which the seven discovered, something that feeds into the flames, fed into it through these troughs, which then lights up the night sky like an angry god's lantern. Who rules it? Rules Juan Tangri.
And so they take a moment to look out the window at the battle going on down there in the grounds of the city outside the tower. And the last panel on this page, panel 22, this has the best narration, I think, of this story.
For long moments, Conan, Princess, and cringing guardian watch as red, blue, and gold and green all merge in a shifting, murderous spectrum. After a while, the predominant color is crimson.
That means blood. Of course, the Comics Code Authority, we see the blood, but it's black. Turn to page 23. The battle is in full swing. Citizens have joined to a certain extent. It's mostly just the wizards and the soldiers against themselves. But some of the citizens have started to join in, but they find themselves being held back by the warriors with the swords. The princess points out, see, the people love me. And she calls out to the wizards.
Hear me, wizards, depart this city now, for its rightful princess is free again.
To which the black wizard responds,
never! What has been unleashed can be bound again. It is still we who rule in Juan Tangri.
And that's when she points out that the reason they rule is because of the flame winds. And if she was able to put them out, they wouldn't rule anymore. And that gives old Conan an idea. And by the end of this page, page 23, he has approached the machine and he chops at it with his sword because he realizes that While the metal is very sturdy and it's made to withstand all this heat, it's not made to withstand the good old broadsword. And so he swings at it, splits it open, and by page 26, first panel, he's now in. He can see inside the machine, and at the heart of the machine is a bunch of coal that is burning. And so he smashes the pile of coal with his sword, and that extinguishes the flame. I find this super funny because, first of all, the flame tower is a product of science, basically, of engineering. They've learned that there's something in the atmosphere that will catch fire, I guess, when more fire is pumped out to it. And so they built this machine to do that. And to everyone else, it's magic, right? And of course, Conan, he just smashes it with two chops of his sword. Boom, done. Wizards are dead, basically, at this point. Because once the flames go out, the citizens take that as a sign that that the wizards have no power. And here on page 26, it's a great moment. It's my favorite moment of the book because I think it's very cinematic. I could see this on the screen. So this page is separated into three rows. Row one has two panels, row two has two panels, and row three has one panel. In the first two panels, Conan is smashing the coal. The third panel, we see that the flame winds have died out. In the middle row of panels, the first panel, we get this narration.
What effect can night have upon those who have not known it for well nigh half a year? First, it may birth a stunned and awesome silence, as if the gods have suddenly died, or else are speaking for the first time in a 6 month. And then the people remember their oppressors, the seven who hid behind the flame winds, behind them and their rainbow liveried guards. And now there are only the guards.
So I'm picturing this in a movie or on a show, and you know, there's all this chaos in the streets, just this loud clamor of screams and the screams of people attacking, the screams and the wails and the moans of people dying, the clash of metal, just all that going on the streets below. And then suddenly, because it's the middle of the night at this point, if you remember, that Conan decided to infiltrate. He wanted to wait till nightfall. So it's the middle of the night. But as they point out in this narration, the people of Wan Tengri haven't really known a nighttime in 6 months because the flames are always out there brightening the sky. So as all this chaos is going on in the streets below, the flame winds die out and everything goes dark. And then suddenly everybody just stops and freezes and there's just silence. You may hear the occasional bird, maybe some crickets, I don't know. The wind, that's what I'm picturing. I'm hearing the wind and that's it. Just this, all these people just standing in stunned silence, looking at the sky, seeing the stars for the first time in 6 months. And then it dawns on them what happened. And then the chaos erupts once again. But this time, it's the citizens that are just killing everybody. It's a great moment. It's a great bit of writing. And I don't know how much of it was taken from the Norval W. Page version, but it's a great page. It's a great bit of writing.
We heard you the first time, son.
Page 27, we see the citizens still just killing folk, and they have now gone through the guards, and they are now face-to-face with the wizards.
It's bad luck to kill a wizard.
And the wizards just, they can't stand against them. And the part that I'm curious about here is that, I mean, we did see a moment earlier in the issue where one wizard was firing an energy bolt from his hand to another. So I'm assuming they do know some sorcery because they were able to make their gold transport back to themselves if it's ever stolen. They can do illusions and junk like that. But I don't know if all that power came from the flames itself. I don't know. But even if they still were full of magical power, they're being mobbed by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And it's just too many for them to keep up with, and the mob kills them all. And one of them, they show one of them being carried off, who is probably dead, but his eyes are open, but I'm sure he's dead. And that's how the citizens take back Wan Tengri.
Well, power to the people.
Skip ahead past a couple of ads to page 30, and the princess goes out to meet the citizens, and they all drop to their knees, and they bow to her. And so she's very appreciative to that because they know that, you know, she knows that they know where the real power comes. And she makes mention of Conan, who she considers her consort. And she basically is saying that this dude's going to rule with her. He's not a king. He's basically her love monkey. And he's like, nah, that's not what I want to do. I'm my own man. You promised me a ship full of gold. Let's do that and I'll take off. Bortai, however, tries to convince him otherwise because he's telling Conan that he if he stays here with her, he's going to be a king. If not in name, he's going to be a king. And that Bortai will also be a pretty important man as well. But Conan, nah, he wants a ship full of gold. So the princess acquiesces. Hey, that's what I promised. That's what you're going to get. And she sends her people off to get a ship and fill it full of gold for Conan.
Look at all this money!
Page 31, Conan's got his gold. Bortai offers to go with him to help him carry his gold. And Conan agrees. He thinks it'd be fun to have little Bortai along with him. And they get on their big ship. They set sail. And then suddenly, the end of page 31, the tower flames come back on. That's when Conan, because Bortai is telling Conan again, why are you doing this? You could have been a powerful man. And that's when Conan tells him what death whispered in his ear, which was that he who rules the princess rules Wan Tengri. And Conan doesn't think he can rule the princess. He doesn't think any man can rule that princess. He's not stupid. That's why he got out of there, because he knew that there's no way that Conan would have any kind of power over that woman. She's a strong, strong woman. Nobody's going to be able to have power over her unless they do so in a violent way. And that's not Conan.
Of course it is.
And so as they're talking about that, the come to the end of the page, the last panel, the flame winds suddenly erupt. And Conan points out,
look, monkey face, the flame tower's ablow again. No doubt at the princess's stoking this time. I'll wager she'll prove as potent a tyrant as all seven wizards put together. I'll not be a lapdog for any woman.
Turn the page, page 32. And now Conan's laughing, you know, gigantic mirth, gigantic melancholies. Right now, he has some gigantic mirth. He thinks it's pretty funny what she did. And he thinks it's pretty funny that he didn't fall for it. He didn't fall under her spell. He's like, ha ha, I got away. So I'm Conan. And that's when everything goes to shit, because suddenly the ship turns into a little rowboat that is filling full of water rather quickly. And all the gold turns into rocks. And so Conan theorizes that the princess obviously was some sort of sorceress, and she did what the wizards do with their gold, and she brought it back to her, and the ship itself was an illusion. It was just this little dinghy that looked like a ship, that she made to look like a ship, and Bortai suggests that they go back and get what's theirs. And Conan's like, are you crazy? I'm not gonna, it's just you and me against her? It took seven wizards to subdue her. We're not gonna be able to do it. Let's just get across the lake, and we'll figure out what we're going to do when we get there. And he tells Bortai to keep bailing the water out of the boat.
I'm going down with the ship.
And that's where it ends. Next, the hell spawn of Karasher.
Scary, scary. Don't we look mean?
This was a good story. I was a really good conclusion to this three-issue tale. Again, I didn't read the original story. I may one day. I don't know. But It was fun. I'm really glad I read it. I really enjoyed it. I'm having a lot of fun with these Conan books. I don't know what else I want to say about it. I don't know. I'm sure I'll think of something once I'm done recording, and then I'll be like, man, should have talked about that. And if I do, maybe I'll just add a bit in. I don't know. But for now, that's all I have to say about Conan the Barbarian, number 34, The Temptress in the Tower of Flame. Is there anything else that you would like to add? Let me know. Send me an email. feedback@hithercameconan.com, and maybe I'll read it out on a future episode.
Everybody out!
Next time on Hither Came Conan, a dying stranger's final whisper leads Conan and Bortai across the scorching sands to the lost city of Karasher, where a fabled blue jewel lies entombed within a skeleton's grasp. Will Conan withstand the undead wrath of Karasher and wrest the gem from Phantom Claws? Find out next time when we wrestle with Conan the Barbarian number 35, The Hellspawn of Karasher, published by Marvel Comics in November of 1973. The synopsis used in this episode was taken from MarvelFandom.com and then altered, twisted, rewritten, and then added to by me.
My name's Steven.
The information used in this episode comes from Wikipedia, along with Mike's Amazing World of Comics at mikesamazingworld.com, and the book Barbarian Life, a Literary Biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1, by Roy Thomas, which you can get now at SumerianPress.com. And finally, the views and opinions expressed within this episode are mine and mine alone, and do not reflect the official policy or position of Marvel Comics, Roy Thomas, the Howard Estate, Conan, his sword, his steely thews, his many fans and supporters, and especially his god, Crom.
Crom laughs with your four winds.
So until next time, folks, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and as always, be nice to each other. Bye!
I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Stephen or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Hither Came Conan and every other show under the Stephen or Else Media umbrella early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes, or just go to hithercameconan.com to sign up today. Hither Came Conan is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out somanypodcasts.com. All links will be in the show notes.
All right, here we go. All right, looking like we're live. Can't tell if anybody's actually watching because I don't know if nobody's watching or if it's just not showing. There it is. Nobody's watching. That's all right. That's okay. Welcome to Hither Came Conan Live. This is episode number 2, where we're going to be looking at Conan the Barbarian, number 34, published by Marvel Comics. Cover date, January 1974, but it was published in October 1973. Now, I don't have a lot of time today to be to be messing around. So I say we just get into recording the episode, because that's what we're here for, right? So let's just do that. Let me take a drink here, clear up the pipes. Okay, here we go. Yeah, that was the cold opening, folks. And now for the intro. Hello and welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jeweled thrones of Hyboria. I need to take a bigger breath. Take a bigger breath before that. Yeah, I do. So I guess that's what I'll do. Hello and what? I'm your host. My name is Steven. And today we finish up The Flamed Wind. And it is entitled The Temptress in the Tower Flame. Nope, that's not what it's entitled. Following. Why did I just start yelling? They wait until nightfall and then steal into the Flame Tower, where Conan does battle with a man-faced lion and a giant of a man called Shamish. I knew I was going to trip over that guy's name. Shamish the Terrible. If you're watching the video, you just see me shaking my head in disdain. Shamish the Terrible. Sounds like the kind of name somebody would give themselves. So let's do that again. However, as he and Bortai sail away, the princess reignites the flames and magically transports her treasure back to... It was penciled by Gil Kane and inked by Dirt... by Dirt? Who's inked by Dirt? Ernie Chan is not Dirt. That's not what I'm trying to say. So getting into the issue itself, they managed to give us a brief synopsis. I'm just going to do that again. Okay. Is that all right? And there's a real, this first panel here on page 6. Whoa, sex? Steve, I don't know what's going on. Folsom Prison Blues. That's when Johnny Cash said it. So what William Dalstead tells us. Cool. I need to watch that movie at some point, probably. I don't know. I don't know a lot about Johnny Cash. I just don't. I do know, here's a little something. I do know that at one point after Johnny Cash died, Preparation H approached his wife, Roseanne. Is that right? She's still alive? Approached somebody to try to get the rights to Burning Ring of Fire for one of their commercials, and was told, no. I don't know if that's true or not. I read that somewhere. I don't know if that's a true story. Next time on Hither Came Conan, a dying stranger's final whisper leads our Sumerian and stalwart Bartai. Stalwart. I'm just going to leave out the stalwart. How's that? Next time on Hither Came Conan, a dying stranger's final... I'll get it. Just give me a second. Next time on Hither Came Conan, a dying stranger's final whisper leads our Sumerian and Bort... I'm going to say Conan. Whisper and Sumerian. It's all just merging together in my brain. It's not coming out correct. That was it. That's the episode, folks.
just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Enough talk.
Great Crom.